Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg. Welcome to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world.
Hi, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Before we get started today, I want to remind you about Streetwise Hebrew for the Times of Israel community, our bite-sized audio Hebrew classes with expert Guy Charette. A little more about that at the end of today's podcast. Today is Tuesday, October 19th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. Joining me today are U.S. reporter Jacob Magid and diplomatic correspondent Laser Berman. Jacob, you have a story on the site right now about the visit of Israeli ambassador to the U.S., Gilad Erdan, who went to the south side of Chicago, where an Israeli trauma model is being used to cope with gun violence that has killed 700 Chicagoans in the last year alone. How and why is the Israeli ambassador involved over there? Tell us about the story.
Yeah, it was a pretty unique experience last Wednesday. So Natal's involvement, this is an Israeli organization that deals basically with trauma that's induced by terror. So we're talking rocket fire and terror attacks and responding to that kind of, and those kinds of attacks. And Natal doesn't really act beyond Israel's borders, but it was brought to Chicago and their trained folks in the South Side. And it's the result of a relationship between a pastor from the Bronzeville neighborhood in the South Side named Chris Harris and a rabbi from the North Side of Chicago, Rabbi Michael Siegel. And Harris had been encouraged to visit Israel by Siegel and did so in 2012. And that's where he met with Natal. And the Israeli consulate in Chicago helped facilitate the extension of Natal's work to a city like over 6,000 miles away that's been dealing with a different kind of trauma on a pretty regular basis. The day before we were down in the South Side, there was a shooting at a school two blocks away, and a 14-year-old girl was injured, and a security guard was also hurt. So this is violence that's just has actually probably gotten worse in the midst of the pandemic. And they're looking for ways to, models to kind of, to cope with it, if not necessarily mitigate it, but then at least give folks the tools to deal with what they're seeing on a daily basis.
Okay, you have some really great quotes from Harris. For instance, I'm reading one. "While you guys worry about missiles and sirens, we're counting body bags here every day," Harris told Erdan during the Bright Star tour. "We don't have Iron Dome or bomb shelters." He has another great quote about, you know, obviously about Black Lives Matter, about training brown and black Chicagoans to be the ones who are giving the care in the shelter. Talk to us a little bit about that. In other words, it's not a natural friendship necessarily.
Sure. I think the reason why Harris said it has been successful is that it's been kind of black and brown led. As in, it's not, he referred to it as white people kind of parachuting in, or like, I don't know if anyone's been in college, spring break, alternative breaks where they take you to paint some building in the developing world or in the inner city, and that's like your good deed for the year. But this is an actual relationship that's being built where you're kind of giving the folks in the community the tools to work, that they have the capabilities of dealing with these things. They just need the tools and the resources, and that's what this Israeli organization is giving them. And one other interesting thing I really thought that Harris said is that they're trying to get past this long period in Black Jewish relations where oftentimes we kind of have, every year they said they get together and they talk about Heschel, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, the famous conservative rabbi, marching with Dr. Martin Luther King during the civil rights movement, which was decades ago. And there hasn't really been a new chapter since. And he said, "We're kind of sick of telling these stories. That's the past. Let's talk about the future. Let's build a new chapter." And he said talked about using the frame of that Heschel King picture, but making new pictures, of partnership between blacks and Jews in the South Side and beyond.
But what's the motivation of Erdan, of the Israeli ambassador, of the Israeli consulate in Chicago? What's their motivation?
Yeah, I think I asked him that, and I said, "What brings you? What? Why is an Israeli ambassador to the U.S. finding himself in this small community in Chicago?" And he said that Part of the success of Israel in its relations at the governmental level at the top is influenced by its relations with folks on the bottom and the lower level, the grassroots level. And at that level, there's about we're talking about minority communities that make up roughly 40% of the American electorate, and they overwhelmingly vote Democrat. And unless they start to see Israel as not what, as Erdogan described them, as the white privileged power, if they continue seeing Israel as this white privileged power in the conflict with the Palestinians, as opposed to what he described as this diverse, country that protects minorities, then Israel will be, quote unquote, losing the battle, in its effort to change minds in the U.S. And he recognized there's this kind of difficulty because, Harris talked about the need for those leading this program in the Tal to be kind of leading from behind and letting the black and brown, or letting the folks that are in the community being the ones that are kind of training other folks or being the counselors, that the trauma counselors for the peers in the community, as opposed to kind of having the Israelis doing the work. So, On the one hand, they want this project to succeed. On the other hand, they would like Israel to get some sort of recognition. And I asked him how you can really do that when this specific program doesn't really allow that. And he said that Erdogan kind of said that at the end of the day, the truth will come out and people will realize the role that Israel's playing here. And more than that, Harris assured Erdogan that those who he works with know the role that Israel's playing in this, and the Israeli consulate specifically.
And is the Israeli consulate doing this kind of work in other communities? Did that come up at all?
Yeah, so they're trying to possibly expand this model to, I think they said as many as 9 other states, that would be interested in this kind of work. Harris spoke about how before Natal, nobody even talked about trauma in Bronzeville on the South Side. I think he talked about therapy and counseling in general being very stigmatized, white counselors not really checking in on black students in schools until after the fact, and there's kind of stigma of not being willing to open up about it. Seeing something you're supposed to just get through it and not ask any questions. But now, as a result of Natal's work, they've reached over 45,000 people in the past 2 years, and maybe that the violence hasn't gone down, but Harris definitely believed that they're allowing people to heal after that violence, and they're possibly also preventing retaliation. He talked about how in black neighborhoods in Chicago, the justice system often doesn't make the arrests or the indictments against perpetrators of violence. So that leads to folks trying to retaliate and take and seek revenge. But because of the work that Natal and the trauma, work that they're doing, that they're able to prevent a lot of that retaliation.
And I saw that the participating rabbis from the community were also there.
It was really nice to see. I didn't mention also there was a rabbi from Skokie, Ari Hart, who was connected with Pastor Harris due to the consulate. So these are relationships that might not have happened had the consulate not been there to facilitate them, which is a really interesting role that you wouldn't necessarily expect a consulate to play. But Rabbi Hart, with the help of Pastor Harris, at the top floor of the church where he operates, there was not being used. And Rabbi Hart has an organization, it's an Orthodox Jewish initiative to kind of build bridges with the minority communities in Chicago. They built a literary center at the top floor of this church that opened up on Sunday. And Rabbi Hart was there to share with Erdogan about the story of the partnership there. And Pastor Harris really credited him for kind of showing up and doing the work. I think we've kind of seen the past year, actually, there was a lot of, I covered a bit, there was this controversy with Nick Cannon, for example, where he made some comments that were deemed anti-Semitic on his podcast, and all these mainstream Jewish organizations rushed to condemn him and then sought to kind of bring him in and have a conversation. But they were criticized, I think, for coming off as quite patronizing, trying to educate him about anti-Semitism. But what you saw here was, and following that, they on the other hand, they weren't really present. Some of these organizations during the protests of the past year for racial equality, And this was because, or at least partially, they said that there were this discomfort with the Black Lives Matter movement, because this umbrella body in 2016 that is loosely affiliated with Black Lives Matter endorsed BDS. And that therefore there were a lot of folks in the organized Jewish community that were uncomfortable joining those protests. I think, and I talked to Pastor Harris about that, and he said that a lot of people in his community don't even know anything about BDS or this organization's support for it. But he did say that this kind of work that he's doing is, I think, the better answer in an effort to build bridges between Blacks and Jews, focus on kind of actions and more and less about words.
Really interesting.
This Times of Israel podcast is brought to you by Koren Publishers Jerusalem. Whether you're looking to enrich your mind or your soul, Koren Publishers has it all. From Israeli history to the works of Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Steinsaltz, and other contemporary thinkers, including the brand new Magamon edition Koren Tanakh, with translation by Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb, Jessica Sacks, and many others. Times of Israel listeners can get 10% off your entire order. Just go to korenpub.com and use the code TOIPOD, that's KORENPUB.com, and enter the code TOIPOD for your 10% discount.
Laser. The Jewish Agency was about to vote on a new chairperson following the withdrawal of Intelligence Minister Elazar Stern over controversies suggesting that he had ignored anonymous complaints during his time as head of the Army's Manpower Directorate. So now it's postponed. What's going on? Who are the possible choices here?
Sure. So the vote was supposed to be, was originally scheduled for October 24th. And Yair Lapid, the foreign minister, had requested in writing that the vote be put off significantly, even by a number of months. The executive board of the Jewish Agency rejected that request, but they came back with a compromise. And that compromise is that there is a deadline of November 17th for the coalition to submit their candidate. Like you said, the coalition candidate was Yesh Atid's Elazar Stern, and he shot himself in the foot with his comments about his behavior or his attitude toward anonymous complaints of sexual harassment while he was a general in the army. And now they are looking for a replacement, let's say, an agreed-upon candidate that will be the coalition candidate. Now, this is rendered more complicated by some of the politics of this coalition. There is a rogue Yisrael Beiteinu MK, Eli Avidar, who wanted a ministerial position. He was not happy with the would have been called a minister, but he would have been folded into another ministry. He would not have been running the ministry. And he said he would not vote with the coalition until he is given the vote that the position that he desires. And so the idea was that Elazar Stern would move over to the Jewish Agency and Avidar would be the intelligence minister. Now that that's not happening, they have to find a candidate that has a ministry, that is a minister, that will move over to the Jewish Agency and that Eli Avidar can take his place.
That's ridiculous.
The leading candidate, it is ridiculous. And Jewish Agency is a major organization, is an important organization, and should not be subject to the whims of internal politics, and that's not how someone should be selected. And some of the candidates came out, one of them anonymously, and said, listen, this is too important. This should go to someone who actually wants the position, has been in the running from the beginning. The candidate, I think, that is most likely to be the coalition pick would be Nachman Shai, whose name has been floated in recent days. And he is the diaspora affairs minister, so he could, if he gets selected, he would be making way for Avidar to take his ministry, it would seem.
So in the story that we have up on the site, we've got six women, I believe, photos of six possible candidates who are all women.
Sure. So the majority of the candidates are women. So you have some very talented and prominent figures. So the most prominent would have been Tzipi Livni, whose name has been floated, but she has not entered the race. Had she entered the race, she would have been a front runner for sure. But there's a fear of making the Jewish Agency into a parking ground for retired politicians. Some of the figures who have been there from the beginning, you have Michal Kotler-Wunsch, who is an MK, and is now at Nefesh B'Nefesh. She started their Aliyah Strategies think tank. very prominent human rights lawyer, advocate for Olim. Fleur Hasson Nachum, who is the deputy minister of Jerusalem, has been very involved in women in tech, has been outspoken advocate for women, women's advancement in business and politics, and is also very involved with the Abraham Accords in terms of the business-to-business selection. You have other figures as well. You have Omer Yankelevich, who was a minister, first female Haredi minister. You have Professor Yaffe Zilberschatz. And perhaps the most interesting, Irina Nevzlin. She led the transformation of the Diaspora Museum at Tel Aviv University. And her complication is actually kind of interesting. Her father is an oligarch in Russia and a serious Putin foe. And he's wanted for murder. This looks like some sort of trumped up charge that Putin, how he pursues his political enemies. But that certainly would be a complicating factor since a lot of what Jewish Agency does is in Russia. So there's some real intrigue this year in the race. And there's also a couple of very qualified male candidates. You have Michael Oren, who is a former Israeli ambassador to the United States and former MK, and Dani Danon, who was Israel's former ambassador to the UN and a former Jewish Agency employee. So there are a lot of very interesting, very qualified candidates. And again, it seems like we're going to have a coalition candidate enter the race very late and clearly for political internal politicking reasons is going to influence the vote.
And just to clarify, what's the timeline now at this point?
Sure. The timeline is November 17th. The coalition has to submit their agreed upon candidate. And then what I was told yesterday is about a month after that. So there's been no actual date set, but about a month after that, they'll be voting on the candidate. And then in February, the 120-person board of governors of the Jewish Agency has to approve that person, but that's pretty much a rubber stamp.
Okay, so we've got a few months until we know who's actually going to be leading the Jewish Agency.
Yep.
Okay. You also covered the visit of Swedish Foreign Minister Ann Lind, who came to Israel for the first time of a Swedish government official in over a decade. What brought this visit about at long last?
Well, ties have been not especially warm between Sweden and Israel for a while. 2014, Sweden's foreign minister, or Sweden supported the, or recognized the Palestinian state, which was the first major European country to do so since the Cold War. And then there were comments by the foreign minister Wallström indicating that the reason that one of the major drivers of terrorism is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and other statements like that. So ministerial contacts were cut off between the two countries, and Sweden was seen as one of the most hostile countries toward Israel in the EU. The governments have changed. Sweden also realizes that there's a lot that Israel and Sweden can agree on, and there's a lot of positive work to be done. Throughout this time where the governments were not meeting, there were still extensive business contacts, and Sweden, like Israel, is a medium-sized country, has about 1 million more people, and it too is looking to position itself as an innovation leader, and that will be the future of its economy. So its innovation arm has three foreign offices. It's got one in Silicon Valley, one in Brussels, and one in Tel Aviv. So that is significant and shows the light in which Israel is seen in Sweden. But there's plenty more for them to cooperate on, including things like climate change, women's rights, things like that. And Sweden understands that it's better to be talking to Israel, and there's a lot to be done together, and there's no point in continuing this freeze-out that has gone on for the better part of a decade. I'll also say that Sweden hosted the Malmo Forum on Holocaust Remembrance and Anti-Semitism last week, which was significant. And Lapid mentioned that in his statements with the foreign minister. So there is positive movement. I will also say that Sweden is one of the countries that has been vocal in its support within the EU for Israel and the EU to resume their association council meetings. So those are supposed to be annual meetings between Israel and the EU that have been frozen for many years. And Israel is trying to resume them, and Sweden came out publicly urging that support. So we really have seen a change in Sweden's public attitude toward Israel.
Laser, do you think this has come about as a result of our current government, or would this have happened with Netanyahu in the prime minister's seat?
So this is a process that's been going on about a year and a half. So the process did start under Netanyahu. It's you know, it's impossible to say exactly how it would look, but I think that Sweden understood that it wants to change its relationship with Israel, and that was under Netanyahu. At the same time, this government has really prioritized its ties with the EU. It is focusing on things it agrees upon, both within the coalition and with its partners in Europe. So this is very much in line with the attitude that the coalition, especially Yair Lapid, wants to take toward Europe. And you can see that with his visit to Brussels earlier this year and some of his other statements and visits with EU countries. So this is very much a part of the priorities of this coalition.
Okay, makes sense. I'm going to remind our listeners to sign up for Streetwise Hebrew by becoming a member of the Times of Israel community at our website. We're happy you were here with us today. See you tomorrow at the Daily Briefing.
Hi, it's Sarah Tuttle Singer from the Times of Israel. Come join our community and support fast and fair independent journalism. You can sign up with the link at the bottom of every single article on the site.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel Daily Briefing.
You can find us daily wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, on thetimesofisrael.com.